This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Police in Los Angeles facing 3 days of clashes with protesters and demonstrations against ICE immigration raids. ABC's Matt Gopman was in downtown for the unrest.
Just moments ago, there's some projectiles being thrown. Just moments ago, a motorcycle seemed to try to break through the police skirmish line. And now you can hear all those flashbangs going off. Police are trying to push those protesters back.
Mayor Karen Bass and Governor Gavin Newsom both saying they did not request the National Guard. It was the first time since 1965 the National Guard was deployed by a president against the wishes of a governor. Scores of scientists have signed a letter called the Bethesda Declaration, challenging Trump policies they say are meant to undermine National Institutes of Health missions, waste public resources, and harm the health of Americans and people around the globe. Warner Brothers and Discovery announcing this morning they will be splitting off into two public companies by next year. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thede. Vernon County Sheriff Roy Torgerson reports on Thursday evening that one of their deputies, while in the process of executing an arrest warrant in the town of Wheatland, was exposed to secondhand methamphetamine smoke. The deputy was treated at Vernon Health in Viroqua and later released. Unrelated to the arrest warrant involving a different individual, Kyle John Backlund, age 35, of Viroqua, was arrested. He was booked for possession of methamphetamine and possession of drug paraphernalia. Kyle Backlund was also booked for felony bail jumping, stemming from a May 29th drug-related arrest by the Viroqua Police Department. In that case, a $1,000 signature bond was ordered on May 30th. At the time, Backlund was also being held in the Wisconsin Department of Corrections for a probation violation. He was released from custody Wednesday, 33 hours before the deputy was exposed to the methamphetamine use. A bail hearing was scheduled Friday at 2 in Vernon County Circuit Court. Formal charges will be sought through Vernon County District Attorney Angela Palmer Fisher. Young people headed to college or out on their own after high school need to be wary of credit card offers. Lisa Schiller with the Better Business Bureau says that there are shady businesses looking to prey on people with fresh credit histories. Schiller says starting with a low-limit credit card from your bank is probably the best place for high school grads to start from. For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thede.
The Brewers' homestand continues. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opening a three-game series against the Atlanta Braves tonight at American Family Field. The crew got shut out by the Padres yesterday, 1-0. Milwaukee leaving 10 base runners stranded and just couldn't find a way to score some runs. Pat Murphy.
We didn't get the big hit when we needed to. We could have scored, a ton of runs. We had a ton of traffic. It seemed like we just didn't come up with a big hit.
The Brewers losing the series to San Diego 2-1. NBA, the Pacers fall to the Thunder in Oklahoma City, 123-107. Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton said it seemed like the refs allowed them to be more physical in game two.
The officials said, let us play a little bit more. So just got to do a better job playing through there. I just got to figure out how to be better earlier in games. Kudos to them. They're a great defensive team, but we can do a lot better job and, watch the film and see if we can get better, going into game three.
The series tied at one game apiece. Game three Wednesday night in Indianapolis with sports on Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be mostly cloudy today with scattered showers and thunderstorms likely. Our high right around 65 this afternoon. A few scattered thunderstorms possible again tonight. Our low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny and it will be warmer with a high in the mid 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now it's 57.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Matinee on air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matinee on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, oil and gas industry expert Matt Randolph, also known as Mr. Global, will be here to talk about all things energy in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It is I, the aforementioned Pat Kreitlow, on this Monday morning, June 9th. Welcome back, Up North, 8:06 here on Lake Wissota, and Brittany Merlot is going to have the forecast. We're going to check in with John and Gordy down in Madison in just a bit. First, want to let you know that in the next half hour, we will be talking about apprenticeships in the building trades, and the executive director of the Building Trades Council here in Wisconsin will be our guest to talk about ways to alleviate the labor shortage in Wisconsin. So normally, you've heard us mention a few different times that when we turn to Parker Olson, he's there in Studio A2. And I'm sure you're going, well, is there an A1? Yeah, it's normally in use, yeah, you know, during these early hours of the day. But we found a little space of time where it's not being used in any productive manner. And we've been able to talk our friends in Madison, John and Gordy, who have finished their show, into wasting some of their time on this one. John and Gordy are in A1. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
Great to be here.
Yeah, wonderful to have you here.
We wasted 2 hours, Pat, just waiting to be on your show.
Well, if you could entertain anybody along the way before that happens, it would be appreciated. And I'm sure a few listeners in Madison do just that. And Dom, of course, is their producer, so he's in the control room there. Brittany Merlot is standing by there. We just wanted to show that we could pop five studios up on screen at once.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it took nearly a Nobel Prize winning effort of engineering to get it done, but we're here. So now, having proven that point, Parker and Dom are going to shut their cameras off because it's too much for me to take in at once. I am just overstimulated.
Get them out of here.
Toddler at this point. All I can handle right now is that Brittany Merlot is back and has a local forecast all across the state that's going to be a little rainy, a little warm, but can't wait to hear more about it. Hello, Brittany. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good.
You're looking at this whole screen full of men. Like, I cannot get an edge in word-wise with these guys. But
right?
Here we go.
I'm just kidding.
The next few moments are all yours.
Okay, here we go. I got the stage. I wish I had a better forecast for you, but it is pretty nice middle of the week. Today, though, this morning, we're waking up with temperatures at 48 degrees up north in Phillips, and it's about the low 60s down south into Kenosha and West Bend right now. Sunshine in eastern parts of the state. Well, the rest of the state's wondering, what? No way. We're stuck under these clouds still throughout the day. We are looking at rain rolling through central parts of the state right now with a low pressure system overhead, a cold front sweeping south through the state. So yes, clouds are headed your way into the eastern areas too. Highs still on the cooler side, mid 50s far north to mid 60s far south today. So only a few more degrees for our high temperatures. We're still looking at a little bit of wildfire smoke kind of hanging around Madison to Milwaukee this morning. And of course, scattered showers still continuing through this afternoon. A few small storms could spark this evening as well. None of them are expected to be severe, but a few rumbles of thunder and a little bit of rain there. But we do have a high pressure system moving in, and it's going to take control tomorrow and Wednesday. It's going to brighten the skies up. It's going to warm us up to the mid 70s tomorrow, and then we'll flirt with 80 degrees on Wednesday. So a little summer dash there in the middle of the week, and then more rain as we close the week out, unfortunately.
Brittany, we appreciate the appearances here, and we know you're all over the network. Do you have to appear with these fellows over here, John and Gordy, every so often, too?
I do, every single morning. Yes. I love them. They're a hoot.
Oh, well, then we can check. John, Gordy, how would you grade Ms. Merlot there with her forecast presentation today?
We couldn't do without her, actually. Oh. We wouldn't have weather in Madison without her.
We wouldn't weather in Madison.
She's excellent. You know, Pat, I was a TV weatherman for 20 years, but I retired from that business more than 10 years ago. And I got to tell you, Brittany does just a fantastic job. She's right on top of the weather, not only for Madison, but for the whole state here. So we really, it's great to have her with us every morning.
Aww. Thank you, guys. You guys are the best.
Brittany knows I got my start as a TV weather person on the college TV station at UW Eau Claire. It was my very first appearance. And Brittany, when a listener discovered that there's a clip on YouTube of that with my big 80s hair way out to here, and you know, I probably weighed 100 pounds at the time, and it just reminds Brittany of just how far she's come and how much better she is than all the rest of us, and how lucky we are to have her. Thank you, Brittany.
You gotta love that, though. Those old school news bloopers, or just, you know, when you're first starting out, they're the best.
I don't know what you're talking about. My voice wasn't cracking at all.
Thank you, Brittany. All of ours did, even the females, out of nervousness. Yes. You know what I mean? You got that camera pointed at you.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It happens.
It's scary.
Yep. Yeah, but then you get, you know, you turn into old pros through time and experience and a dose of cynicism. We'll get you through a lot of things here. Thank you, Brittany.
Pat, what did you like working with? The magnets on your weather maps, or did you like the...
They were the Velcro. Yes, they were styrofoam. Okay. Painted styrofoam, and then we would put the Velcro letters on there, the H or the L in the little fronts.
I'm a little jealous. Great. That's kind of cool.
Those were the days.
Yeah. OG technology. Thank you, Brittany. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
All right. We'll see you later.
All right. John and Gordy are with us now from WMDX in Madison. And so folks know that we talk to people throughout the Civic Media Radio Network throughout the course of the week. We talk to Melissa Kay on Wednesdays from WFHR. For example, we've got James Kelly on, Earl Ingram is on, and now we've finally been able to make arrangements for some time for John Gordy to visit with us and talk about things that they are talking about on their Madison show. But before we can get to, you know, the Madison show and show topics and everything, since we haven't had you on this program yet, we'd like to know just a little bit more about you guys. It's John Peterson and Gordy Young, and they've been known as John and Gordy since, was it 1964? When did you guys get started?
Not quite that far back.
Oh, okay, all right.
Close.
Almost.
All right, well, take us back to when the earth cooled and how this all got started.
I think it's about 1989 that we finally got together.
Right.
And that had to do with me having radio shows here in Madison at different stations that I get fired from one, move on to another. And Gordy followed that career. And we met finally at a TV station, Fox 47, started up a new station here in town. And he was the promotion director. And we ran into each other at their grand opening,
which was in 1986. That's when we first met. But
that's
we didn't
when we
start
first
working
met, yes.
For a couple of years after that, we started working together. But I hired John to do some voiceover work at the TV station. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got started. And we started doing a movie show on the weekends, late night movie show, where we did little things in between the commercials, little vignettes.
And played really bad movies.
Yeah, really awful movies. And that's where we started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then eventually... We got together on the radio there.
That's right. We went to a station 92, not 92.7, but another 92.1. And it was magic at the time. We just loved working together. It all just fell together for us. And it's been John and Gordy ever since, actually. But, you know, I got to tell you, Pat, you know, we got that radio station in Waukesha, WAUK, and that's where I started. That was my first on-air radio job, working at WAUK in, like, 1978, 79.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you know, though, of all the people you know who tell stories about first jobs and all that, there's nobody out there that has stories quite like early radio stories. Like my first station was WAQE in Rice Lake, and it was in you know, kind of an old duplex or something. WBKV in West Bend, you're in this basement studio where, you know, they didn't have anybody to clean the toilets or the bathrooms or anything. So, you know, everybody had to pitch in. Everybody's got some story about, you know, those first radio jobs and how unique they are when you get going.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my first station was WNNO in Wisconsin Dells, and that was a wonderful place to start out because we had a window on the street. You know, we were right downtown, and of course, in the summertime, it was just crazy tourists coming by and banging on the window and trying to get your attention. And but like you said, you do everything. You know, you do everything from empty the waste baskets to sweep the floors to, you know, doing some commercials.
We wised up this time because now we have a city view. We overlook State Street, the State Street in Madison, Wisconsin, and we're a second floor built office. So now no one can knock on our windows and try to get our attention.
We literally look down on folks, you know, as they're walking up and down State Street.
We look down on.
You know, you mentioned the late night movie thing, and that actually ties into how I met my wife.
Really?
I feel like I should turn to the girls, my daughters, and go, "How I Met Your Mother." I was working at the college TV station, the aforementioned one, and was again hosting kind of the late night movie thing. And I signed off after the movie saying, "Well, I'll see you down on Water Street," which of course is, you know, in Eau Claire, where all the college kids go. And met her in a bar, and she said, "Oh, I saw you on TV there." And she was there with a girlfriend of hers, and I was there with a guy friend of mine who were dating at the time. And Sherry and I just kind of got to talking, not realizing that our friends were having a disagreement about something and broke up right in front of us. And each left, and neither one of us was a good enough friend to go with our friend. We were like talking to each other. So we just kind of kept talking after that. And we're still talking 41 years later here. So
that's great. It all started with
a late night at the movies. Was that the extent of TV work for you then? Or?
Well, no, we had another show. It was on cable. Remember Cable Access?
Yes.
So
they had Cable Access shows all over Wisconsin.
Yeah, think about Wayne's World. It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
And our show, we invited all the other DJs from other radio stations, competing stations, all the other TV, local TV people to come on this Cable Access show. And it was pretty fun. And we had local bands, and we did that show once a week for a couple of years.
Local,
3 years.
Very controversial business entrepreneurs in town.
Yes.
A strip club, just to mention one.
Oh, yeah.
So Cassandra asks on YouTube, "Do you know where exactly you were in the Dells? I'm wondering what's replaced your studio. I grew up there."
Okay, Cassandra. Well, I can tell you exactly where it was. It was 721 Superior Street, and now it's a cigar store.
Wow. Okay.
It was always meant to be a cigar store, by the way.
It's funny. I stopped in there a couple of years ago, and the layout is exactly the same, where the rooms were, where the studio was, everything else. It's just filled with cigars and accessories. But that's where it was. Yeah, right next to right next to Fisher's Bar, if you know where that is in Wisconsin Dells. So, Cassandra, there you have it.
There. Yeah. All right. We're talking to John and Gordy. You can hear them 6 to 8 a.m. in the Madison area on WMDX, or, of course, through the Civic Media app as well, getting to know a bit about them before we talk about some of the things that they do on their show. So, guys, family in town, kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, you guys might be a very fertile family.
Well, actually, I'll tell you what. I've got two Gen Zers living at my home. One lives upstairs in our apartment that we have in our home, and the other lives downstairs in an apartment that we also rented out at one time. So they're both living at home. I hear from them all the time. They keep me updated on all the latest news. I keep them updated on all their tech with the money I make.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful arrangement. I love having them around. You know,
that's great.
It's great stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and I live in Madison. My daughter lives over in Fort Atkinson, about 45 minutes east of here. And my son lives in South Bend, Indiana. He's got a business there, working at an art supply place or an art house, I guess you would say. And so I don't really have family locally here in Madison, but not too far away.
All right. We are talking to John and Gordy, and still ahead, we're going to be talking to Emily Pritzkow from the Building Trades Council about growing apprenticeships in Wisconsin. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Henricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
Good morning. For WRCE News, I'm Tim Thied. Vernon County Sheriff Roy Torgerson reports on Thursday evening that one of their deputies, while in the process of executing an arrest warrant in the town of Wheatland, was exposed to secondhand methamphetamine smoke. The deputy was treated at Vernon Health in Viroqua and later released. Unrelated to the arrest warrant involving a different individual, Kyle John Backlund, age 35, of Viroqua, was arrested. He was booked for possession of methamphetamine and possession of drug paraphernalia. Kyle Backlund was also booked for felony bail jumping, stemming from a May 29th drug-related arrest by the Viroqua Police Department. In that case, a $1,000 signature bond was ordered on May 30th. At the time, Backlund was also being held in the Wisconsin Department of Corrections for a probation violation. He was released from custody Wednesday, 33 hours before the deputy was exposed to the methamphetamine use. A bail hearing was scheduled Friday at 2 in Vernon County Circuit Court. Formal charges will be sought through Vernon County District Attorney Angela Palmer Fisher. On Thursday evening at 6:44, the Iowa County Communications Center received a report of a traffic complaint in the town of Highland. A responding Iowa County Sheriff's Sergeant located the vehicle and conducted a traffic stop. Following the stop, the driver was arrested for operating while intoxicated, first offense. The individual was transported to Upland Hills for evaluation and later released to a responsible party. Friday evening at approximately 10:18, the Iowa County Communications Center received a report of a wanted person in the city of Mineral Point. An Iowa County deputy, along with Mineral Point officers, made contact with the subject at a residence in Mineral Point. As a result, Orlando C. Bennett, 54, of Mineral Point, was arrested on multiple outstanding warrants through Grant and Washington counties. Bennett was transported and custody turned over to Grant County Sheriff's Office. Over 1,000 citations were given to Wisconsin drivers for failing to buckle their seatbelts. The Wisconsin State Patrol handed out more than 1,300 citations during its two-week Click It or Ticket special enforcement program from May 19th through June 1st to remind drivers of the importance of seatbelt safety. The State Patrol points out that there were 176 deaths last year from crashes where drivers or passengers weren't wearing seatbelts. The campaign gives state troopers an opportunity to educate drivers and passengers on the benefits of buckling up, which is a top priority year-round. Young people headed to college or out on their own after high school need to be wary of credit card offers. Lisa Schiller with the Better Business Bureau says that there are shady businesses looking to prey on people with fresh credit histories. Schiller says starting with a low-limit credit card from your bank is probably the best place for high school grads to start from. A local launch event for the book Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change, featuring authors Tom Moskaller and Mike Brenninger, will be held tonight at the Richland Center Community Center. Brenninger is not only a co-author of the book, but also a local resident.
Tom Moskaller from Madison and I wrote this book, Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change. It took us 3 years to put this book together. We actually had a team that worked with us. But, you know, the more people you've got, kind of the slower things go. So 3 years in the making, but we finally got it launched in 2025.
The book is structured to help inform its readers on how to create positive community changes.
In the middle of each story, we have kind of a cliffhanger. We go through the first half of the story and then it stops. Then there's a little cliffhanger, like what's going to happen next. And in between the first half of the story and the second half of the story, we give instruction about what you go through to develop a shared vision, for example. How does that work? The lessons that we've learned. So there's a little bit of instruction. After the instruction, then there's the second part of the story that tells how things ended up. And each story is an engaging, interesting story. Some are from Wisconsin, some are from other states, some are national stories. And then after the story is done, there's think and do activation. So things to think about and then do. What's the first step I take if I want to make this a vision and a shared vision?
Tonight's event will begin at 5:30 with a tour of the Richland Center Aquatic Center, which is one of the stories in the book. Following the tour is the author's presentation. Brenninger discusses what the presentation involves.
And at 6 o'clock, we will have the author's presentation. So typically, Tom and I will give a little discussion about the book, about why, about what we went through to make it happen, and where we've been so far. We'll tell a little bit of our own story. We typically have a story from the book being read. We will probably have the Aquatic Center story being read. And then we have people go through a little exercise. What's an interest you have? And it's kind of a table exercise where they write down how they would work that into the framework of the book.
Following the presentation, there will be a Q&A session and refreshments. There will also be a book buying and signing. Cost of a book is $15. If you already have a copy, you are welcome to bring it to be signed. All are welcome to the Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change book launch event featuring authors Mike Brenninger and Tom Moskaller tonight starting at 5:30 at the Richland Center Community Center. All Walk with Grace teams are reminded that T-shirt orders are due tomorrow. Orders can be dropped off at the Grace office above Royal Bank in Richland Center from 11 to 6. Returning teams should note, if you have a revised logo, they are due tomorrow as well. As a reminder, 2XL shirts and larger are an extra $2 per shirt, and any extra money owed is due tomorrow as well. For WRCE News, I'm Tim Thede.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henricks.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thede. A local launch event for the book Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change, featuring authors Tom Mossgaller and Mike Brenninger, will be held tonight at the Richland Center Community Center. Brenninger is not only a co-author of the book, but also a local resident.
Tom Mossgaller from Madison and I wrote this book, Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change. It took us 3 years to put this book together. We actually had a team that worked with us. But, you know, the more people you've got, kind of the slower things go. So 3 years in the making, but we finally got it launched in 2025.
Tonight's event will begin at 5:30 with a tour of the Richland Center Aquatic Center, which is one of the stories in the book. Following the tour is the author's presentation.
At 6 o'clock, we will have the author's presentation. So typically, Tom and I will give a little discussion about the book, about why, about what we went through to make it happen, and where we've been so far. We'll tell a little bit of our own story. We typically have a story from the book being read. We will probably have the Aquatic Center story being read. And then we have people go through a little exercise. What's an interest you have? And it's kind of a table exercise where they write down how they would work that into the framework of the book.
Following the presentation, there will be a Q&A session and refreshments. There will also be a book buying and signing. Cost of a book is $15. All are welcome to the Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change book launch event tonight, starting at 5:30 at the Richland Center Community Center.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Starting July 1st, you can take even more time getting to your seat at the movies. That is, if you're going to AMC theaters. The Hollywood Reporter says commercials will start playing before movies, along with coming attractions. The theater chain set up a deal with National Cinemedia. With commercials, the Dolby Surround sound ads, theater etiquette ads, and previews, you actually have time to watch another movie on your phone before your featured attraction starts. But use headphones, please. Otherwise, it would be rude. Sydney Sweeney has been in the news quite a bit lately. She's now part of a new thriller, and not the kind that involves her selling her bathwater. She and Julianne Moore have teamed up in a new thriller called Echo Valley. Moore plays a divorced single mom raising her daughter, played by Sweeney, who is running with the wrong crowd and has a drug problem, which causes her and her mom to go broke. Might have to use some of that soap money. The film is directed by BAFTA winner Michael Pierce and drops on Apple TV June 13th. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be mostly cloudy today with scattered showers and thunderstorms likely. Our high right around 65 this afternoon. A few scattered thunderstorms possible again tonight. Our low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny and it will be warmer with a high in the mid 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 57.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State Senator Keldall Royce.
The vast majority of people on Medicaid are already working, and it is Medicaid that makes it possible for them to work. People who are disabled or have chronic illnesses and without that health care, they would be out of the workforce. They would have no ability to participate in the economy, and now they can. Medicaid is one of the greatest workforce programs this country has ever built, and they are trying to dismantle it, and with it, they're going to take people's lives and economic security.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early, Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the show Young Sheldon, actor Lance Barber. And we'll talk about the amazing career and life of Michael J. Fox. We are going to light it like it's Monday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll have Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. And if you're not already following him at his site or on Substack or through Civic Media, you really ought to. His political writings are very informative about what people are doing in the Capitol and elsewhere. And he'll have a column tomorrow that focuses on next year's governor's race that you're going to want to know about. We'll talk to Dan during the 8 a.m. hour tomorrow, and then he'll be filling in for Maggie Dawn tomorrow afternoon along with Angela Lang. And by that time, he will have published his column and talk all about the contents of this week's writings, which are very noteworthy indeed. Time to talk now about the building trades and the labor shortage in Wisconsin. Emily Pritzkow is here, Executive Director of Wisconsin Building Trades. And we're going to be focusing on a new report, a new study about the value of the building trades, especially union training in addressing the Wisconsin labor shortage. Emily Pritzkow, good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, Pat.
Now, it's nice to have you here. And what prompted this was a new report by the Midwest Economic Policy Institute and the Project for Middle Class Renewal, looking at the skilled trades and union-affiliated apprenticeship programs. And we want to make sure we make that distinction here because of the role that it plays in the quality of training that you get. But let's just talk about it from a general standpoint first, that the building trades, to what degree are they doing, pun intended, the heavy lifting to solve the skilled labor crisis in our state?
We are punching well above our weight when it comes to solving that skilled labor crisis. That study you referenced, which I think came out in the last month or so, highlighted what in the trades I think has been a pretty well-known fact, which is that three out of every four apprentice in Wisconsin that's doing construction apprenticeship is a union apprentice. 96% of funding that goes into construction apprenticeship comes from the union trades. So when it comes to driving the next generation of skilled workers, we're doing it all. We're carrying that weight, as you said, and we're doing it really well and delivering amazing outcomes for contractors, for end users on these projects, for communities.
And it's happening because you're seeing, you know, historic investments in infrastructure through the bipartisan infrastructure law, in renewable energy through the Inflation Reduction Act, and just through the recovery that came from the pandemic, the increase in domestic manufacturing. Now, current events notwithstanding, we know that the Trump administration is trying to put the brakes on all of those things, but there are already so many things in the pipeline right now that are underway that really underscore the significance of there is still work to be had in the skilled trades and in the construction trades overall, right, Emily?
Yes. We are putting on people as fast as we can get them into our apprenticeship programs. That includes, I want to say this early on, the average age of our apprentice is usually between 27 and 30-ish. It fluctuates every year. But, you know, this is a great opportunity for people who maybe are not super happy with the career they're in right now and are looking for pension, gold standard health insurance, a flexible schedule, the ability to work with your brain and your hands, and by the way, to make an amazing living. And that was another highlight of the study that we can touch on later is the compensation for these jobs. But for all those reasons, there is a need there. We're filling it as fast as we can. We work with our contractor partners every day to do that. with end users. But yeah, these are fantastic careers, and there is a need, an evergreen need for them.
Let me give a couple of the takeaways here from that Midwest Economic Policy Institute. As of 2022, there were more than 8,500 construction apprentices enrolled in union programs. The union programs account for 96% of apprenticeship investments. There's a like you said, a strong economic outcome. Union journey workers earn a median wage of $41 an hour. That's 41% more than their non-union counterparts. And so again, there's going to be need for skilled trades in construction all over. But this report really seems to affirm that, you know, you get what you pay for, and that it's these union trained apprenticeships that are providing the most bang for the buck.
Correct. Another thing the study shows, no knocks on the UW system, but the typical construction journey worker is making, I believe, 24% more than someone with a bachelor's degree from a UW system school. And they're making 5% more than someone with a master's degree from a UW system school. Wow. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible. You know, it's, I think the trades have always been sold as this alternative to someone who maybe, you know, a four-year degree is not a good fit for them. We're really competing or exceeding the outcomes for those other career paths.
We're talking now with Emily Pritzko, who's the executive director for the Wisconsin Building Trades Council. There's another part of the report that is certainly worth noting, and that is the difference between states that have something called prevailing wage and states that don't. So before we explain the difference, let's talk about what prevailing wage is and whether Wisconsin has it or not.
Yes. So prevailing wage in general, it can be very complicated the way it's calculated, so I won't go into that. But it's basically a survey that is done of wages paid to workers in similar roles within a similar area or region, and it serves as a compensation floor for construction workers. It basically ensures that there's a baseline for compensation, benefits, all that is taken into effect, and then it ensures our workers are fairly compensated for their work and that they're earning a wage that allows them to support themselves and their families. A natural byproduct of that with prevailing wage is you generally have the funds from those prevailing wages staying in those communities. It increases the hiring of local workers in general. And it has all kinds of other beneficial outcomes. You can guess when you are coming to an industry that does have an aspect of it that underpays, misclassifies workers, and tells them that we are going to set a floor here. We're going to set a minimum wage for these construction workers, and this is what you're going to pay them, and it's going to be family supporting. And unfortunately, in Wisconsin, that was repealed under Governor Walker. So we are not operating in a world here where prevailing wage exists. On federal projects, it still exists. And it leads to those outcomes we see today. And as the study pointed out, these amazing numbers we're seeing for apprenticeship with outcomes, with completion, we could grow those at a much faster rate when you compare it to our neighboring states. If we were to restore prevailing wage here in Wisconsin.
Another way to think of it is, you know, essentially you've got Wisconsin construction workers who are used to making so much, but, you know, without prevailing wage, you essentially risk, you know, some out-of-state company coming in, and I'm just going to pick on Alabama. It could be any place, but they bring in out-of-state workers at a much, much lower wage. And then, of course, they take those earnings and they go back to Alabama or wherever they're from, and they don't get the multiplier effect that you would with Wisconsin workers that are being paid a fair wage for living in Wisconsin. But yeah, with Scott Walker and Republicans repealing that a number of years back, the study says that while apprenticeships are growing in Wisconsin, they are lagging compared to the neighboring states that still have their prevailing wage laws, essentially just reaffirming the value of having prevailing wage laws on the books, Emily.
Exactly. And you made a really important point, which I think was a driving factor behind prevailing wage or the Davis-Bacon Act when it was established, is like when we are building these massive federal or whatever state infrastructure projects in a certain area, that area should benefit. And they should benefit from workers in that area and employers in that area being able to compete to secure that work. They should benefit from workers that train on that job, because as we know, registered apprenticeship is basically a 5-year long mentored training. And those people that are learning the skills on that job should be able to be from that area and stay in that community and bring their skills and their training to other areas of work. But you also hit on the point of all the businesses in that area benefit when our workers are from that area, when they spend money in that area, when they stay in that area. And a lot of the promises that were made when prevailing wage was repealed, you know, that there would be increased bids, that projects would be done faster or cheaper, that has not come to pass.
No,
hasn't happened. And I think you can guess why when you talk about training and wages and all those other reasons. Our workers are more productive, they're better trained, they're faster.
Exactly. And so one other aspect, because some folks hearing this might think, well, what, this is just union bosses pushing their weight around. No, this is about doing things in partnership. And this same report that we're talking about found that joint labor management programs affiliated with building trades unions are attracting the lion's share of new workers to careers in the industry. And one of the economists who co-authored the study, he said the data makes clear that the joint labor management system is punching well above its weight to deliver the skilled workforce supply that Wisconsin's construction industry needs and the job quality that its economy demands. And so in an era, Emily, when you've got politicians always working to exacerbate divisions, and that would include divisions between, you know, labor and management, the evidence is clear that when labor and management are partners in apprenticeships and in building, it is a win-win.
Correct. I mean, that's another point, Pat, I think is really valuable, is that we are different than other union structures you may see. The majority of our relationships with our signatory contractors or contractor partners, they are coming to us because we supply a highly skilled workforce that they view as a successful aspect of their business. So they are choosing to sign collective bargaining agreements with us, to sit down with us at the bargaining table and figure out a way to get a win-win when it comes to funding our training programs, when it comes to supporting the workers that work on these job sites and accessing the manpower they need. So we're a good deal all around for them, and they are choosing to come to the bargaining table to work with us.
And so looking forward, as we look at things like the Wisconsin legislature, the state budget process, other legislation they could be working on, are there any things there that would continue to show support for union apprenticeship programs?
Another important point that we haven't even talked about. We fully fund our programs with zero taxpayer dollars. They are funded in those collective bargaining agreements through our members taking contributions, a small contribution from every dollar they earn, and contractors at the bargaining table figuring out what that looks like and putting it into a training fund. So we are 100% privately funded to provide this training to the workforce. That being said, we talked about the damage that prevailing wage is doing to the workforce here in Wisconsin and our ability to be as successful as we can be on these projects. But also expanding access to what we call readiness programs would be a great thing to look at, especially when it comes to getting folks into trades that have not historically been in our trades. That would be a great thing to look at, and protecting apprenticeship as it is right now.
Good things to support, plural. Emily Pritzkow, Executive Director for Wisconsin Building Trades. Emily, thank you so much for the visit. We learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pat.
All right. And when we come back, we'll hear from Jane Mattenair about what's coming up on her show, along with Greg Bach, right after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise. Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill backed by Donald Trump that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Matt Miller, Milwaukee-based film critic. The film Sinners, the more distance I have from it, the more I liked it. Is that an Oscar film?
I think there is a love for what Sinners is doing, that a studio movie was this interesting and creative and thoughtful, but also entertaining. This is not the last you will hear about Sinners this year. I'd be shocked if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Pat Kreitlow Mornings here on WRCE FM 107.7 and AM 1450. Here's your local look at sports. Black Earth won at Cazenovia on Sunday in home talent baseball by a score of 8-2. The host Red scored two runs in the opening inning on a two-run home run from Isaac Jennings. The Bombers went on to plate a run in the third and two runs in the fourth to take the lead for good. Derek Adler was 4-for-5 with an RBI and two runs scored for Black Earth. Mark Caminiti was 3-for-5 with a double. Bryce Hopwood worked all nine innings, throwing just over 100 pitches to get the win. For Cazenovia, Aaron Hipsch pitched the first six innings, and Isaac Jennings worked the final three frames. The two youngest players on the team, Houston Boland and Isaac Jennings, were both 2-for-4 for Caz. Hunter Schmidt and Garrett Jennings were both 1-for-4. The Reds fell to 0-4 in Sunday league action. Black Earth now 2-4 in the northern section, 1-8-2 on Sunday, and Cazenovia prepares for its next game when they will host Reedsburg on Friday night. In other games, it was a win for Dodgeville over Blanchardville, 13-8. Pine Bluff Mount Horeb, 5-3 over Wyota. Arena, 4. Schulzburg Benton, 3. Hollandale, 9-3 over Ridgeway. And Belleville got by Muscadet, 8-7. In the northern section, Ashton 12, Sauk Prairie 8, Reedsburg 13-1 over Cross Plains. It was a victory yesterday for Cross Plains over Black Earth as well. That score 7-4. Poinette 6-5 over Ryo. Columbus 12-2 over Wisconsin Dells. In the southeast, Stoughton 13-8 over McFarland. Albion 5, Jefferson 1, Fort Atkinson 9-2 over Lake Mills. Over the weekend, the WIAA State Track and Field Tournament concluded. River Valley's Wesley Hatfield was 13th in the 100 preliminaries and did not get a race on Saturday, and he took 16th in the 200 preliminaries on Friday. For Richland Center, the boys' 4x2 relay team finished in 8th place. Kevin Hernandez, Fletcher Harper, Robert Budden, and Mason Jelenic. The girls' shot put, Madeline Huber, finished 10th. Division 3 activities, Ithaca Weston's Clayton Lee was 10th in the 1600-meter dash, and he took 12th in the 3200-meter dash. For Boscobel, a good weekend. 10th place for the boys 4x2, Cameron Hogan, Caden Strang, Nathan Gunderson, and Cooper Leffler. 6th place in the boys pole vault competition for Cameron Hogan. Nora Gilson finished 4th in the 800, 5th in the 1600, and 6th in the 3200. And a big weekend for Kickapoo Lafarge. 3rd place for the boys 4x4, Adric Eggie, Jeff Olson, Theo Parr, and Arlen Walter. 12th place for the 4x8, Brecken Miller, Sam Miller, Landon Turgeson, and Arlen Walter. 7th place finish for Adric Eggie in the boys 200. Also in the 400, he took 6th, and boys long jump, 5th place. Adam Boyson was 6th in the high jump. And a 1st place state championship for the girls 4x1 from Kickapoo Lafarge, Katie Rando, Avea Young, Chloe Walter, and Jewel Kleinsaucer. And a 1st place in the girls 4x2 relay competition. Championship run for Katie Rando, Avea Young, Chloe Walter, and Jewel Kleinsaucer. 2nd place for the girls 4x4, Katie Rando, Annika Waslick, Kendall Andelsick, and Jaden Snagel. The girls' 100-meter dash, Avea Young was 7th, and Jaden Snagel took 7th in the 400. Over the weekend, River Valley saw its soccer season end with a 1-0 loss to Aquinas. Saturday afternoon, Aquinas moves on into the sectional in girls' soccer. Big plans this week for high school baseball. It will be Boscobel and Highland playing in the semifinal tomorrow at Blair Taylor High School, 12:30 first pitch time, and we'll have a call on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com. Later this week, coverage of the state girls softball tournament. Number 1 seed Belmont plays number 4 seed Ithaca at 9 Thursday morning. Almond Bancroft and Thorpe play in the other part of the bracket. Mineral Point, another team from southwest Wisconsin, will be playing on Thursday afternoon at approximately 4:30. Over the weekend, we lost a legend from the area. Jerry Pettigrew, the winningest coach in high school basketball, passed away at the age of 84. He coached for 60 years, 52 of those in Cuba City, and retired after the 2022-23 season with a lifetime record of 1,027 wins and only 249 losses. Pettigrew is one of only about 20 coaches nationally known to have reached the 1,000-win plateau and the only coach in Wisconsin to do so. His teams won 29 conference championships, made 12 WIAA state tournament appearances, and won titles in 1981, 1991, and 1998. Back in 2018, I had a chance to chat with Pettigrew about his long career and what makes a program successful.
You know, I think the secret, Phil, is the passion and the desire, and you need someone to organize it, and then you'd be surprised the number of people that are willing to help, want to help, and you just get kids involved, and I think when that happens, you know, one of the things we got going for us in the game of basketball, what an enjoyable game to play, you know, and nothing greater, Phil, than to be in a regional final, conference championship, sectional final, state game. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No,
so when you look at those kind of things, I think it's easy to get the kids involved, and then having kids be willing to put in the time. And there's no, you know, it's nothing in the water out of Dickeyville or anything else. It's a case of being willing to put in the time.
Well, have kids changed since you started coaching in, you know, in some ways, or has it remained the same?
Phil, that's one question that a lot of people have asked me. I think kids are still basically the same. They still have goals. They still have desires. They still want to succeed. I find this, and when people talk about the old days and comparing players, the players today are bigger, faster, stronger, and they're better. I would say about the only sport that I've seen that I haven't seen marked improvement over the years, and that's baseball.
The comments of late coach Jerry Pettigrew. I'm Phil Nee during Pat Kreitler Mornings on WRCE.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Three nights of clashes between protesters and National Guard troops. President Trump called up against the wishes of California's governor and the mayor of Los Angeles. ABC's Matt Gutman was there when the protests broke out.
CHP, California Highway Patrol, deployed smoke. They're moving in, trying to push these protesters out. You can see some projectiles. Detaining someone there.
The LAPD mobilizing resources and LA's mayor pleading for calm.
Our city does not need to be torn apart.
Earlier Sunday, demonstrators swarming LA's federal building, hundreds of LAPD officers responding.
Israeli forces seized a boat bound for the Gaza Strip overnight. Greta Thunberg and other activists were on board, along with aid for Palestinians who have been cut off from food and fuel amid the fighting between Israel and Hamas. Russia launching 479 drones at Ukraine in the war's biggest overnight bombardment. They also shot at least 20 missiles as well. This is ABC News.